This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
This will be second and goal. The give is to Johnson. He's in. Touchdown. Kramer in at fullback. Johnson lined up behind him. First and goal. It's Johnson. And he is in. Johnson's second touchdown today. And now some extracurricular activity.
And I thought Jonathan Vilma was great on the Fox broadcast, along with Kenny Albert, describing all the extracurricular activities. Like, you play football. Why not take all of that out by actually, you know, playing football?
Sometimes when you're getting beat down, you can't get it done between the whistles. You have to wait till after the whistle to get what you wanted to get done, because you couldn't do it under the legal qualifications of what it takes to play football.
Right, but you happen to play a sport where you can act on those feelings in a positive and constructive way rather than a way that's bad for your team. But there it was, Roschon Johnson, who has now carved out, certainly fantasy players will be taking
Vulture.
Notice, carved out a role as the goal line guy, and they ran what Matt Eberflus has been referring to as God's play. That is the power run. Some people think, well, what do you mean? Power run means you're going to pull a lineman around. You are going to get the numbers on one side and dare him to chase it down from the back. You're going to double team at the point of attack. You're going to try for a little kick out. You look for an isolation. And it's everybody knows what's coming, and they just got to stop it.
It's skeet shooting for an offensive coordinator. Pull!
Yep.
And then we go. Away we go. See if you can hit that mark. And
they make it even better for using your backup center as a fullback and the possibilities.
That's a big boy.
That's big. Yeah, and he
moves, bigger than a fullback.
And he moves okay. He actually moves okay. Like, he really gets up ahead of steam. And if he makes this a part of his identity, then, like I say, you never know where this could go, where it could lead, what the possibilities could be. And I loved what Olin Krutz had to say this morning on Mully and Haw about what the mentality of that play can mean for them.
You put stress on the defense when you put big bodies on the field. We were hoping yesterday, Pat Manley pointed out, we were hoping we'd see Kramer in the flat for a touchdown pass, right? But we didn't get to see that. So like the package, like the fact that you line up and say, look, man, we're going to run God's play here. We're going to run power roll. Yesterday, they hit it a little bit by putting Kramer at the wing. They put him in motion and then hitting the end guy. But really like it. It's an attitude play. It's a culture play. This is who we are. Coming downhill at you, worked yesterday against the Panthers, worked last week against the Rams. I really enjoy that style of football.
I do too. And I love that they enjoy it, that when it's called, that feeling of leaving the huddle has to be fun.
Listen, to remember back, it was only a couple of weeks ago when we were like, how come they can't get it done on short yardage? Actually, you could probably go back to last season. They don't have a play to get the 1 yard, right? You go back, since I've lived in Chicago, they didn't have like a standard set play to get the 1 yard. And in football, if you can't get 1 yard, come on, man. I was surprised that they didn't call it on the 4th and 1 midfield. I was like, what are we doing? Why are we deviating from what's been working?
That was the only thing I had written down on my notes. Here it is. Play call drive. They started at their own 25 in the second quarter. They got the 3rd and 11 earlier in the drive when Williams hit Gerald Everett.
Right.
And then they ended up with a 4th and 1.
That was after a 3rd and 1.
Correct. And it was Roschon Johnson both times.
But he didn't have the extra heavy, like, at least not in the backfield.
It was a dive play, right?
Right.
Roschon, I believe, was the fullback.
They lined up in like a weird, a slightly offset split back.
It was offset split back, yeah.
And then they brought Swift in motion and did a straight dive with Roschon, and he just got blown up at the point of attack.
Yeah, so I did have that circled as a bad play call. If this is your identity, say, hey, we're going to run that play that we run and make them stop.
And then they get back on the goal line and they go back to doing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, why did we take a break from that? Because it would have been nice to see another touchdown and perhaps a 40-piece. You know?
We'll get it, I think.
Okay, now you're more confident, even though the competition's getting much stiffer. Now, against the Lions, it can happen because the Lions will let you run up and down the field with them.
Well, it has the point has been raised
okay.
that we should, as a show, perhaps take it under advisement to redefine the criteria for a comfy win. Some say a 26-point win is comfy enough, regardless that 40 is just arbitrary.
Tyson Bagent coming into the fourth quarter of a 9, you don't need him to do anything but take knees. That
right.
would seem to qualify.
I'm open to that. I'm open to redefining comfy.
I wanted the Snuggie to be for something really special, though. I think 40 is a nice bar to clear.
But not if they win 40-38. That's not comfy.
Well, but we were talking... Were we talking more comfy offense or just comfy win overall? I guess that's part of
right,
it, too.
Right, I think
it started with
comfy offense, and it became, oh, if they blow out them and win and hit 40 points, then that's special. Because we did talk about, like, oh, what if they lose 42-40 or something like that?
And obviously it's not comfy because you didn't have enough. But we did mention the human victory cigar who did come out for this game, Tyson Bagent, in a 9, hey, Caleb's hurt. Or whatever role.
Right, it wasn't, oh my God, it's Tyson Bagent.
There's two different tones of, oh my God, it's Tyson Bagent. Oh my God, it's Tyson Bagent. Or it's, oh my God, it's Tyson Bagent.
And if I'm the guy in the game, whether it's on Twitter or you're next to me at a bar, so if I'm the guy who was clamoring for them to get Caleb Williams out.
You did say that earlier. I was like, this is going to be his last drive, Dan.
Get him
We're
out.
Fine.
No,
fine.
I know, but I was like, get him out. I don't want anything to happen to him. Get him on the plane to London and send him there and let him be. Get him out. Get Tyson Bagent in. If I'm saying that, things are really going well for the Bears.
My favorite thing about Caleb Williams is he is not trying to get the contact. He's literally, if I'm running, I'm sliding early. I'll get the first down and get straight down. He took a couple of hits yesterday, but it was only like 2 hits.
The one out of bounds should have been a penalty.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely, 100% should have been a penalty. It was late. His body was mostly out of bounds. You could see the side judge almost indicating that, well, he was still in bounds enough.
If he's not all the way out of bounds, if he hasn't stepped out of bounds, no, he could be heading out of bounds, but if he doesn't get there and somebody hits him, that's football.
I think if your body is in the air out of bounds, qualifies as being out of bounds.
I'm sure by the letter of the law.
You're no longer in the field of play.
But
you know?
Haven't got the whistle has not yet been blown.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can hit him still.
But you're a quarterback.
I don't think that matters because now you're a runner. You're no longer a quarterback. You're beyond the line of scrimmage.
Okay, you're right as far as the letter.
I think y'all's fandom is getting involved here when we're talking about the letter.
Listen,
of the law.
I was ready to run down to Soldier Field and fight them myself after that play. It's like, where's the flag?
Yeah, we were used to the egregious hits on Justin Fields because of the ill-timed slides and two vertical slides. That's why when we were the whole slip and slide thing during Hard Knocks.
And he has used that slip and slide to perfection here in the regular season. He has gotten down early, but when you go out of bounds and you don't make it out of bounds before somebody is angling to get you, that's going to happen from time to time. I understand where you're coming from. I just need you to admit that he had not yet stepped out of bounds when he got hit.
If I were watching the game 20 years ago, I would probably agree with you 100%. I just know the de facto officiating is different than what it says in the book about erring on the side of protecting quarterbacks and punishing those who would dare to
touch a quarterback who's been out of bounds.
Yeah.
Lay your dirty fingers on him.
I will say they've gotten better, I think, with some of the hits in the pocket. I do think that they've.
You're talking about the officiating?
I think they've chilled out. That's usually the referee himself who makes that call. And I think the referees have chilled out a bit on. Look, we saw it against Stafford on that interception that
where
ended
it could have
the
been
last game.
The passer.
He was contact with a head.
Yeah.
I mean, Daryl Taylor hit him in the head.
Yeah.
And they didn't call it. And they're not calling the body weight thing anymore.
Yeah. So they can call it, but it's rare that you see it. You see all the time guys fall on guys because. Let's be honest. Back to what you just said about hitting a guy going out of bounds. When a pass rusher is literally hitting a guy, he doesn't know if he's released the ball or
not. Correct.
That last step is just, I'm taking this guy out.
I think that they know it when they see it now, and I think that has moderated a bit. And I'm not sure it's out of film work or discussion among them or just having more data to suggest the difference between an intentional contact with the head and inadvertent contact or incidental contact with the head. So I'm cool with that. But when you get a guy who, especially a quarterback who is trying to give himself up or not actively trying to get the last bit of every yard, and it's okay to protect him over there because that's where bad things can happen.
I think that's honestly part of this when we talk about like their identity on offense. You have a quarterback who's not literally scrambling trying to figure it out. He knows exactly what he wants to do on every play. Now, whether he achieves it or not, that's the execution of it all. But one of the things I like about this quarterback compared to the last quarterback, and maybe even the quarterback before him, he's declaring. When he steps out of that huddle, reads the defense, makes an adjustment or doesn't, he knows what he wants to do when that ball is snapped. And if he doesn't have time, he knows he wants to scramble to get time to do certain things, whether that's run or find another target. He seems to have the game in front of him as opposed to being scatterbrained.
It's also it's really important to note the difference between a scramble and a run, that he's scrambling. He is keeping the play alive.
Right.
And if his eventual decision is, I'm going to get what I can, or I'm noticing, man, I'm reading the nameplates, I can gash him here, he'll do that. But we were with Fields, we were used to a quarterback who, once he broke the pocket,
it's over.
His first choice was, you're going to have to get me down because I'm going as far as I can that way. And I think it's obvious now that Williams' eyes are staying up. Nothing against Fields, but it's that Williams' eyes are staying up, that he is scrambling to expand layers and to create a bust.
So Shane Waldron's old quarterback, I don't know if you guys saw any of the game yesterday, Seahawks-Giants, crazy game with a crazy finish. But Geno Smith's trying to lead the Seahawks back at home against the Giants, who somehow got a big lead, and they were just... And on one play, he literally is scrambling. I was like, Geno Smith's not really a running quarterback. But he got like, I want to say it was 40 yards on this running play where he just saw daylight, took off. But the whole time he's like, guess what? When they come over here, when they catch, I will be out of bounds. And he was past the line of scrimmage, and he was in full on, looked like Archie Manning when he ran for that touchdown. And he knew exactly when to get out of bounds. I think Caleb is of that mindset. He knows when to call it a day.
Well, he also is good at getting that last extra yard. That's something that, where Mahomes is also, he's not the fastest guy in the world, but he's athletic.
But he knows where the marker is,
and
too.
And what he manipulates his long arms and the ball and a little tap at
out
the
bounds,
end,
yeah,
to gain that extra. That over the course of a season adds up a lot.
Especially when you're talking about the difference between a first down and a possible third or fourth down.
Oh, sure. And just what it saves everybody, that there are... That's when you talk about the difference between quarterback rating and passer efficiency rating, that's some of that stuff in there too. And neither one is perfect. Both have their flaws. All stats have their flaws, but
I don't need to necessarily look at all these numbers. One thing that Studs pointed out before we came in here, 17 of 19 for 200 yards and two touchdowns against the blitz the last 2 weeks. That, like, a rookie quarterback? Sign me up all day.
And who's his mentor? Who's his role model? The guy whose numbers against the blitz were astonishing, Aaron Rodgers. And the actual Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, man, don't bring him up. Or you can, if you want to gloat. If you want to gloat, you can bring him up.
Why shouldn't I?
Because he looked like a shell of his former self. So for the first time in his career, he's two decades of football, right? First time in his career, he took through two first quarter interceptions. And like, he gets to the podium, he's like, yeah, it's on me because I've never done that before. And he throws the third in. They still had a chance to win the game.
The third one, you know he wants to blame the receiver. You know that in his heart, he doesn't think that
but
was his fault.
It is on him. It's his fault.
Uh-huh.
And my answer to all the Aaron Rodgers issues, because I don't think he is quote-unquote cooked, but
nope.
I do think if you had just showed up training camp preseason and taking all of that as seriously with a new team and new teammates. And remember, you only played, was it three snaps last season? Like, maybe you handle that. And then you're in a better position and not 2-3, 5 weeks into the season as a member of the New York Jets and about to get your coach fired possibly at the end of the season, Robert Sala.
I will also mention, too, when Andrew Van Ginkle took off.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, he looked like football god. It seriously looked like a Marvel superhero of some kind.
It was just beautiful.
Because he does not move like a big person. And I didn't know that he was that fast when he hit the corner. And like, okay, that's it. Oh, whoa. All right. You go, Andrew Van Ginkle. My goodness.
It's interesting because earlier there was an interception going the other way where the guy gets tripped. If he doesn't get tripped, he's got a six. And then the game itself might have developed differently. But players make plays.
A lot of long returns yesterday. We had a 100-yard fumble return. There was the Broncos guy. Was it Surtain? I had the pick six walk in. When a team, I love watching blocking in those opportunities. When a team realizes, oh, we get to score now, go get them.
I don't feel like, by the way, we've answered the question like how many good teams there are in the NFL any better after this week's slate of games than we did a week ago.
It's okay.
We're still blobbing out here.
We're still in the blobbing business?
Yes. Like, yes.
I know the NFC North is good. I know that. We are going to be hearing from Matt Eberflus in just a little bit. When we come back, I want to talk about we were joking about the end of the game and Bagent coming in and Bryce Young coming in. The head coach of the Panthers, the handsome Dave Canales, who really cuts quite a figure on the sideline, doesn't he?
He looks like a man who might have another job as a model.
Yeah,
he could be in the NFL store as the guy wearing the apparel.
Yeah, he cuts a very impressive figure.
Someone called it a smedium that he was wearing yesterday. I don't know if that's accurate or not. I don't know.
Yeah, but he said something after the game that was shocking, frankly. So we'll play it for you next on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, The Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
As Bryce Young has come in at quarterback in relief of Andy Dalton. We spoke about Young earlier, started the first two games, was pulled for Dalton, and now he gets an opportunity late in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd get to this point where, now there's the point where I got to put Bryce Young in the game. I don't think that's what they expected.
Unless you wrecked Andy Dalton, unless your pass rush literally wrecked Andy Dalton, then it would have been appropriate.
Well, what was everybody understood what was going on. And you say, okay, well, here's a chance to get this guy out there and get some reps and keep him viable because that's a top overall pick. And we know that it takes time for guys to develop non-linearly, and there will be a time for him, we presume. But this was first-year Panthers coach Dave Canales explaining why they decided to put him in.
Just saw it as an opportunity there. You know, we had a couple of injuries on the offensive line. And again, just like wanting to get him in there to just make, you know, get some live reps. And he did a fantastic job, you know, playing with energy, extending plays, finding some completions down the field, which was all fantastic. So, it's a hard situation, you know, but at that point it was just like, okay, with just the different things happening on the offensive line, you know, it was something that where I wanted to get Andy out of there and then just give Bryce an opportunity to just continue to put some good football on there while we had time.
Whoa. Stick with the first part. It was a chance to get him some time. Well, I get it. Garbage time.
Live reps.
Everybody would understand if it were just live reps, but why go even further and say we couldn't trust that offensive line to protect Andy, and we can't let anything happen to Andy. If anything's going to happen to somebody, it's going to be this guy. What?
That's not how I took it, but I see why it comes off as that, because halfway through he had mentioned it, a couple of offensive linemen down, and at the back end he reemphasizes that the line was...
Yeah! Like, why did you go back to that and say we had some injuries up front and we knew if we couldn't protect Andy, we got to save Andy at all costs? So he's basically saying...
Well, Bryce is more mobile than Andy is maybe what he's... I'm playing devil's advocate here. Is maybe what he was saying, but... And Bryce didn't look terrible.
No, but look, David Tepper may not know anything about football.
True.
But I know he understands valuation. If somebody were to say, because essentially what I heard Canales say was, we couldn't trust our offensive line to protect our less valuable quarterback, so I preferred to endanger an objectively more valuable asset. That's just bad business. Because if both Bryce Young and Andy Dalton are declared free agents right now, there would be more teams interested in Bryce Young. There'd be plenty more teams who had very high grades on him in the draft, who have seen how he's been mishandled, and would say, yeah, if you have to start a franchise right now with either Bryce Young or Andy Dalton, you're starting with Bryce Young.
Well, yes, age being the biggest factor.
Yeah, and his entire college career.
And ceiling also being a factor. We know that Andy Dalton is on the backside of his career.
So I would, if I am the meddling owner, David Tepper, I might ask my head coach, hey, wouldn't it be better organizationally to not expose the more valuable asset if you are worried about protection?
But I think that only comes into play if you really have already made that decision that Bryce Young can't have a resurgence as a Carolina Panther. Are we
have
there?
They?
I don't.
Have they?
Is it not too early to say that after a couple of games?
Well, that's what it sounds like. If you're saying we don't value him as much as we value Andy Dalton, that's what he said. If you're already saying that, then I think the answer is yeah.
I think Bryce Young is going to have another chance. I would hope that Bryce Young has another chance as a Carolina Panther this season to come in, get the cobwebs off, and have a chance to start football games for the Panthers. Because I understand why they made the change they did when they did it, because the season was literally getting away. Well, now the season's kind of gotten away. With the injuries that have happened on the defensive side since that happened, looking at that team up and down, this is a lost season.
Okay, then you have to play Bryce Young.
Yeah, I think they're working towards that.
If you had your last gasp salvage opportunity and say maybe after that inspiring win and now under Andy Dalton, or maybe Dalton just has a Jedi mind trick thing going on people.
What do you mean?
Because he somehow, as if there's somebody sitting right near me who somehow would also start to believe that Andy Dalton's actually better at football than he is. He did it to Matt Nagy.
Andy knows.
He did it to Matt Nagy. He's apparently done it to the Panthers. He's made people continue to believe, and maybe I'm at fault too, because I was reading all of his lofty career numbers.
No, I don't.
At this stage, he's just not that good.
I don't think Andy Dalton's as bad as he was against the Bears on Sunday. I don't.
Okay. Maybe you're saying good things about the Bears then.
Yes, I'm definitely saying good things about the Bears.
Okay.
I told you I had an appropriate level of fear for one.
I think you had
Andy Dalton.
I disagree. I think you had an exaggerated amount of fear.
Okay, but listen, if you're scared, at least you're going to be more apt to be prepared. Fair?
I get that. Yeah.
So that's what I was saying.
No, ignore the polls. It's still a tight race. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, if you want to, but if you have that appropriate level of fear for your opponents, then at least you're going to not look at any of these games as pushovers. And the Bears are certainly, even after a 3-2 start, in a position to look at any game as, oh, we got this. And they weren't against the Panthers. Now, they went out and did it against the Panthers. But no, if anything we learned from that trip down to Indianapolis for the Bears, no, you're not at that level yet.
That's fair. And going into a week with as much variance and weirdness as overseas travel has, that we have to be mindful of that as well when we're getting up early on a Sunday.
Well, the Jags are also better at football and healthier at football than the Carolina
Correct.
Panthers.
So, I think that's also objectively true, but maybe it's enough for the Panthers now that somebody in that organization tells Dave Canales, play the kid. Figure it out.
Yeah, defensively, they're so hurt on defense, it doesn't really matter. They could put up, let's say they put up 24 points a game the rest of the season, they still might not win any games.
That's Marshall Harris. I'm Dan Bernstein. It's the Bernstein and Harris Show. When we come back, we have Matt Eberflus's press conference. It just concluded. He's got thoughts, he's got answers, and he, Flusie, can be, for this week, a winning head coach on the season. You'll hear from him next on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, middays 10 till 2.
as Caleb Williams and the Bears defeat Andy Dalton and the Panthers. Dave Canales and his club dropping to 1-4. Bears now 3-2.
I don't know what they're yelling at Dave Canales.
His name.
Yeah, I just know.
One of my Latino brothers, I could hear him.
Oh,
Hey, Dave Canales! Hey, brother, we see you!
Wow. I wouldn't mess with Dave Canales. I wouldn't make him mad at me. Cause
that was just a little love, I think.
Yeah, was that all it was? Okay.
See you, bro. We see you.
All right. Sack machine.
Haven't seen win in a while, but we see you.
Sack machine.
If Jose from Logan Square is there, I don't know.
It might have been him.
It could. I don't think so. He's here every year. Sack machine. I don't think at some point we have to play that in its entirety for Marshall.
The context is lost on
you. You don't. That's what we're doing at 140.
Okay, just to understand the history of
145
of gas money / beer money and Jose and okay. So yeah, good. Remember that. Put a pin in that, as they say. Matt Eberflus met the media earlier today.
Good to see everybody. Long time no see, right? pleased with the effort yesterday by everybody. After watching the tape, like I said yesterday, in terms of complimentary football, it was really good, especially right before the half, like that. Coordinators put together a good plan, and they executed that plan for the most part. I thought the no huddle and doing the stuff with tempo was good. I thought that was gave us a little bit of juice there. And even though you're not snapping the ball right away, you can always assess what the defense is doing there. So I thought that was good. You know, an injury update I have is 76 Tevin Jenkins. That's the only one I have. He's got an ankle, and we'll see where it is as we go through the week. So I'll take questions.
He's going to go with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Caleb's talking about the win against the Corvette players. When you evaluate quarterbacks and when you did this offseason, do you sit there and go, do you need to be a certain kind of quarterback to play at Soldier Field effectively? And is that an arm strength thing? Is that a just how well can you spin it thing? What are the clues you look for to see, can this guy throw when it's windy?
Yeah, I mean, you want to be able to see him drive it through the wind for sure. And the wind was swirling yesterday. It was a little bit different than normal, coming out of the west, northwest. So it was good to see that we operated the way we did, in the quarters that we wanted to operate. So the wind was going one direction for sure. And you could see that in the kicking game. You could tell when Torrey was punting one way, it was difficult to punt it down there. And when it was the other way, it was a little bit easier. So, but to answer your question, yeah. Caleb's got a very strong arm. He can cut through the wind. And, again, you got to know which way it's blowing to, make sure you understand where it's going to go when you throw it.
Do you view that as one of the things he's got to, as he takes these steps about, how to play quarterback in the NFL, just learning how to play in a kind of an unusual home environment, with the weather, with the wind?
Yeah, I think that's like anything. I think he's going to have to learn how to do that as we go, because it's going to get worse. It's not going to get better. So that's the way Chicago is. So we're going to get ice. We're going to get wind. We're going to get snow. We're going to get all the elements here. So it's going to be good. And we'll practice outside too. So we'll get used to it.
What's the greatest benefit of doing the no huddle? And what does it say about Caleb that you're comfortable letting him do that?
Yeah, I think the greatest benefit is to, you control the pace and you could, get on the ball and snap it right away. You can get on the ball and look and see what the defense is giving you, in terms of the looks. You have time to change your call if you'd like to, so there's a lot of benefit to it. And I think it's a cat and mouse game you got to play on as a defensive guy. I think it's really good. It's really good to get the tempo going and the guys operate. And, of course, he's very comfortable doing that because that's what he did a lot in college. And he'll tell you that, too.
What were you most impressed with Caleb Williams in this game?
I would just say the ability to get the ball to the receivers, in a more consistent way. And, that was by design. That was by, we haven't had a big game like that by the receivers yet. So there's – playing point guard, he's done that, a couple games ago and last game, getting it to the tight ends and backs. But this was getting the ball down the field to the receivers, and that was most exciting to me.
Man, I know the benefit of arriving early in London is getting adjusted to the time difference, but what are the challenges of it, just in terms of practice logistics or players getting out of it?
Yeah, the challenges are is to stick to your routine. Because it's a little different, right? It's, you know, planes, trains, automobiles, all that stuff. And then you got to really wire in to doing your job, you know. So whatever your prep is on Monday, today, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, all the way through the week, you got to keep that the same, you know, because there's going to be other things that go on. And I'm going to have a meeting with the players once they get in here about that. And to me, it's about staying with your routine. Whatever time you go to bed at the same time. Don't change it. And you got to make sure you're doing that. And we have to do that as a group.
The Jaguars play in London every year, including twice last year. They have a lot of players who've done this before. What kind of advantage is that for them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what it is, right? So we're going to do our plan. We're going to focus on us, and it's about us, about how we prepare, how we go about our business to prepare. It's what we're going to do on the grass over there. So we're going to look at our preparation, our film study, how we prepare, just like we do here, and it's going to be no different.
Have you looked into what teams do? I mean, is this an unusual, is this just another game, or is this special enough that you've looked into what wins, what doesn't, what's an advantage? Have you researched that much? What have you done?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. It doesn't seem like there's any numbers that tell you that one way or the other. But, you know, to me, it's about focusing on us. That's really all we can do.
Yeah, I was going to ask along the lines of London. Some teams, it's just another road game. But other teams say, well, you know, the cultural and historical significance of being in a place like this. What's your philosophy on a trip like this?
Yeah, to me, it's just about that field's the same size, and it's about preparation. It's all about us, and that's what my mantra is going to be, and that's what it's always been. You focus on your preparation. We have, you know, Jacksonville, and they present issues like every other team does, and we got to really deal with those issues, and then we have to focus on our execution.
You've talked about, you know, the run game has been better the last 2 weeks. You've talked about the execution of the blocks and of the running backs. What about Caleb's ability at the line of scrimmage to identify safeties, to identify and get you into the right run?
Yeah, it's getting better.
Out of the wrong run game.
Yeah, it's getting better. It's not perfect yet, but it's getting better. You know, so the defenses give you different looks and disguise different things, and sometimes you're right when you do it, and some, you know, most oftentimes you're right, but sometimes you're not. And we're getting better week to week.
Is that just with experience, everybody gets better, or are there things you can do to improve it kind of?
Yeah, I think it's just with time and experience, you know, just exposure to it. And again, every week it's different, you know, different teams disguise different ways, and you got to be on the tells and making sure you're on point there.
You mentioned that it was by design to get the ball to the receivers and get the ball downfield. Is that something that the receivers and the players had been voicing as well, with that open communication with Shane Waldron?
Yeah, I think so. And it's been in practice. You know, we saw it in practice first, and there's been that connection here in the last couple weeks, and we were just waiting for it to happen in the game, you know, when the looks presented itself. And a couple of times it did yesterday, and we got some good looks and had some good execution.
Seemed like the defensive line had its best game yesterday. Would you agree with that? And how would you assess the way they played yesterday? It seemed like you got contributions from a lot of different guys. And frankly, you know, the outside noise before the season was that position might be the biggest question mark, but it seems like it's been good so far.
Yeah, the rotation's been great. You know, so keeping guys fresh and really platooning those guys through there. I think Travis has done a really good job of that during the course of the game. And you have your guys fresh in the fourth quarter, fresh on third down, to make sure they can operate and be at a good level there in terms of energy level, in terms of rushing the passer, you know, like Jervon, you know, he's been rotating out of there, and even saw Big Bill there yesterday get a sack. So it was good to see. My favorite play of the game, by the way.
Matt, on the second touchdown to DJ, it looked like Caleb was making some adjustments at the line of scrimmage. What can you tell us about what?
When was it?
On the second touchdown to DJ on the post.
Uh-huh.
It looked like Caleb was making an adjustment at the line of scrimmage. What can you tell us about what he did there to maybe set things up?
Yeah, he was just making, based on a look, was, you know, making some adjustments there and signal to the receivers on this side. But we had that particular route on the other side, you know. So I thought DJ ran a really good route there. And that was, you know, sequencing right before the half there. So I think it was really good in terms of how he pressed outside, got some separation there, and ran that skinny post. So ball was right there where it needed to be, and good execution.
On the Hubbard touchdown run, what did you see happen at the linebacker and safety level for the hole to kind of open for him?
Yeah, that's just being where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. That's really what it was. Some guys got cut out on the backside. That usually typically is what it is. It wasn't misfit in any way. We just got to do a better job of playing technique.
What do you need to be most aware of with Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah, Trevor's a good player. You know, he's experienced. He's got a good cast of receivers. He's got a good offensive line in front of him. And, you know, they really got their run game going this year as opposed to last year. They got, you know, really got good numbers right now. So it'll be a big challenge for us. He just does a really good job of distributing the ball. He's had a big pass to the rookie yesterday. So they've been efficient, and they looked good yesterday for sure.
You mentioned Trevon Dexter. From my perspective, it seemed like you guys were challenging him in the offseason to get his body right. And then even in camp, he didn't get like the full endorsement, like that's your job. Is that a correct characterization, and has he now earned it with –
Yeah, he came back, like I said, when we got back from the summer. He came back in great shape. You know, he changed his body, and he really worked hard, and he's really goes hard in practice. You know, he's got his wind conditioning part of it down, and he really established that during training camp. He really does a good job taking care of his body, so he's available. He does that really well, and he just owned the position, you know, and I really think that he's really taken off that way. And he's got the athletic ability and the determination to get that done. So, again, this is week to week. He's building on some good performances, and we'll see him hopefully go forward with it.
There have been some teams that request a bye week after the London trip and teams who haven't. What went into your decision to do that?
Yeah, I just think it's a good time. You know, if it's our schedule is good because we got this, you know, this first six, and then you got another six, and then you got the, you know, a little mini bye there. So I think it fits out well for us in terms of the timing of the season, and it's going to be good for us.
What'd you like about the play that Byard made on make the interception?
Yeah, that was a really good interception. I've never seen, you know, the ball go up that high. You know, usually it's broken up by the receiver. But he did a good job using his body and his leverage there to really high point that football. Great concentration. It was really, really good one.
That's Matt Eberflus sounding somewhat subdued today. Maybe aware that they've got a lot ahead of them, or maybe he didn't get a whole lot of sleep like a lot of coaches do even after a win.
I think for him, he's like, we're in a great spot. We got to keep this going. We just need one more week, and then we can just take a beat. Take a beat. But
good,
it's a big
everybody.
Week.
Long time no see, right?
Right.
So, like, yeah, I like where they are. I like the way the schedule builds. I've talked about that. I didn't know about the requesting the week off after the trip to London as their bye. But I love that for them.
It makes perfect sense. Then you get a full chance to reset. Oh, I have to move the Powdered Toast Man figurine further away from the studio. Right?
So this is like your Powdered Toast Man board game in our office, basically.
Yeah, it's like the Doomsday Clock, where the better the Bears are doing, the further away Powdered Toast Man gets from sitting here. Because when things are going badly, and I think that the coach is toast, then he sits here. But now,
right in the studio, right in front of you.
Right, but he's far away now. I'm going to move him closer to his little house where he lives next to my computer screen. So I remind me to do that. It's sort of like with baseball where we let the brooms out, although this is more than theoretical. There is an actual figurine.
Let the brooms out?
No need for that now.
I just want to point out that, I guess, last year the Jaguars flew in on Friday. They've switched it. So they've been... At first they went on Tuesdays, then they went on Mondays, but now they've been going on Fridays for the past 8 visits. And they for the second year in a row, it might be 3 years in a row, they're playing back-to-back games in London, and the Bears are their first of 2 straight games in London. And they've got this down to a routine. So it's interesting that they go on Fridays, because they won last year both their games when they had back-to-back games.
Well, the Bears are doing something different with this trip as opposed to the one, what was it, 2018?
2019.
When they 2019 when they played the Raiders. So they're leaving tonight. The Bears are flying out tonight. And for that 2019 game, Matt Nagy's crew decided to go later in the week. And as you'll recall, that game didn't turn out very well for the Bears.
They played a terrible first half.
Yes. So this is like an effort, a concerted effort to make sure the adjustment, the body clock adjustment begins early in the week. So it's very wise.
And by the way, I'm told by an NFL insider that the league gives the teams an option of either a bye or a home game post-London. And sometimes teams don't want their bye that early in the season, so they allow you, when you agree to be the team that makes that trip, or you're sort of dragooned into doing it, they will give you that option.
That makes sense. Like, bye or a home game, you can't be out here having us go coast to coast. Like, what if they had a West Coast game or something crazy?
I don't know. And that's when you really want to hear the gambling history. And
right.
You really, because those are the people who would really know about what some of this stuff means as far as making you more or less likely to win the next game. So that was Matt Eberflus, and the news being the only guy for whom there was an injury update was the oft-injured Tevin Jenkins. And it wasn't his ribs, it was just his ankle.
Right.
All right, well, here's hoping for the best for him. We know that we are going to have some of the very best in Bears talk next, because Dan Wiederer is going to join us. Bernstein and Harris with you on The Score.